handle the academy. Chop my big chest, where the best is a philosophy. Drinking at lunch brings verbal skills like a sucker punch. Welcome to CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah.
It's Japanese folktales. I came to Japan. Of course, I want to learn how to speak Japanese. I want to learn how to read. I want to learn how to be a better person. I want to be able to interact. So when I was learning how to read at first, I wanted some hiragana books. So hiragana is sort of the first alphabet you learn in Japanese. And so I found some kids' books, and they were Japanese folk tales. And I got really interested in them, and I really enjoyed them. And this is how I started learning some Japanese vocabulary that I didn't know. And I thought, you know, folk tales will give me a little insight into the culture. And I kind of wish I hadn't done that, because the insight into the culture was absolutely terrifying. Japanese folk tales are just off the chain. They are just insane. Kids' stories, folk tales, traditionally are, if you get like the old original versions, are always like horrendous stuff. It's always people getting torn in half. I would say in the European tradition, the Western tradition, that they are generally trying to teach you something. So Hansel and Gretel's like, obey your parents, don't go into the forest, you know, be careful of strangers. Little Red Riding Hood is like, be cautious of strangers, that kind of stuff. Like, there is, despite the horror of the story itself, a lesson you're trying to impart upon children. Japanese fairy tales or folk tales, they go hard, and I spent years trying to figure out what the actual moral of a lot of these was, and it turns out the moral of most of these seems to be revenge, as in get some. So the first story I read was The Crab and the Monkey. So I'm going to tell you sort of the abridged version of this. When I actually started doing research on these, trying to learn more about these, turns out, you know, this is an oral tradition, so there's multiple versions of the story. The interesting one on this is what gets used in the final revenge plot kind of changes depending on where you are. And I bet it's actually just local stuff gets used so that it's more familiar to the people who are actually hearing the story. But I'm going to tell you the story, and then we can do a little bit of analysis. I got three stories to tell you today. There's a crab. Very happy crab. He's just walking around. Oh, I can't start like telling a story. I got to actually, cause there's too much. He has a rice ball. He finds a rice ball. And then first of all, don't eat found food. Like, that's just a new thing I'm just going to throw in there. If you find a rice ball, don't eat that rice ball. That's not good for you. The monkey comes along and he sees the crab with the rice ball. He's like, don't eat the rice ball. Give me the rice ball and I'll give you this persimmon seed. Persimmons are a fruit in Asia. And the crab's like, that's a bad deal. I got this, you know, one in the hand right now. I can eat it and I'll be satisfied, be very happy. I don't know if crabs eat rice. Sure. I'll go with that. Crabs eat rice. I think everything eats rice. Like, if you have a rice ball, I don't think there's any animal that would actually refuse to eat it. Okay. Again, tangent. I got a not tangent. This might be the hardest part for me, discipline-wise. The monkey convinces the crab, says, I'm going to give you this seed. You can grow the seed into a persimmon tree. The persimmon tree, therefore, will provide you with persimmons for a very long time. It's a much better deal. It does take patience. And the crab's like, you know what? Crabs just, you know, inherently patient animals. I will do the exchange. So gives him the rice ball, gives the monkey the rice ball, takes the persimmon seed, goes off and plants it. The monkey's like, haha, I got a rice ball. Eats it right away, you know, disappears. X amount of years later, I assume, they just kind of just jump, cut, smash cut to the next part. The crab plants and grows the tree. It produces a lot of fruit, but it's a crab. Crabs don't have famously long arms, and they're not particularly good at climbing. Don't tangent. I can't. I've seen videos online of giant crabs climbing up walls. Okay, that's not what's happening here. This crab cannot climb. God, I'm going to ruin this. It's not like I was going to make it good in the first place. This crab cannot climb the tree to get the persimmons. And the monkey is in the tree. And he's like, haha. He takes a persimmon. He starts eating it. And the crab's like, hey, dude, those are my persimmons. You can't have them without my permission. You need to, like, at least give me some persimmons. You shouldn't be eating my persimmons. There's a lot of argument there. The monkey, being a little bit of a prick, takes an unripened persimmon, so very hard, and throws it down and kills the crab. So this is straight up murder. Now, there's a couple versions of this story. One is very graphic, where it like cracks its carapace, and then the thing suffers for a long time and dies. And then others, it just throws it down and just kills the crab. Now, this crab had babies. Again, they grew this tree for years. So I don't know how old these babies are, but I don't know how long crabs live. A crab's one of those animals that just lives forever until it dies. I guess is every animal. What I mean is there are like animals that have sort of a finite lifespan. There are people who think that like lobsters are immortal, like something has to kill them, but basically they never get sick or anything. I don't know if crabs are the same as that. I know a couple of people listen to this at like double speed. This might be very confusing for you. I'm sorry. The earliest version of this is when the persimmon hits the crab to kill it, it actually gives birth in that moment and then dies. So it was carrying babies inside or something, but all the versions, the crab has babies. Then the baby crabs are like, let's get some help. And they don't really explain what the help is for yet. It's almost like a question of, is there inherent knowledge that the babies are going to go get revenge? Or is this like a reveal? That's actually something I should ask some Japanese people. After learning every one of these stories, when I read these stories initially, I went to some Japanese coworkers and I asked them questions about it. And they were always very befuddled because they couldn't answer any of my questions because they were like too nitpicky, I guess. So they go and they want to get to like the Japanese folktale version of the A-Team. We're like, we're going to go get the best of the best. So they get a chestnut, a bee, and an usu. Now an usu is usually a tree stump that's been hollowed out. And what they do is they put rice in there and they get a big hammer and they pound the rice. So you've probably, if you've watched any video on Japan, seen the guy hits it with a giant hammer and then the other guy mixes it and then he hits it with a hammer. And there's a rhythm to it. So they want to go fast without actually hitting the guy's hands with a giant hammer. So there is a rhythm kind of thing you can see if you want. That's not important. You got to know what it is. It looks like a giant heavy pestle. Heavy is the important word. And a cow poop. So as a person listening to this story, I did have issue with the anthropomorphization because before we were dealing with monkey and crab, both animals, they could talk to each other. I'm accepting that. Okay. Now it seems like the author, the creator of this folktale, is just like, well, what do I want in this story? I'll anthropomorphize those, but not necessarily everything else. So my problem was, yeah, anthropomorphizing cow poop. So the bee makes sense. It's in the animal kingdom, just like the crab and the monkey. I'll accept that. The chestnut, that's pretty tough. How do we have a single sentient chestnut? The usu is something carved from a tree. It seems like if you were going to anthropomorphize trees, when it's an usu, the tree had to be cut down. It would be dead by now. But we're just going magic. But the poop was a bit of a stretch. I was like, why do you have to do a poop? And I'm like, it's Japan. Japan loves putting poop in stories. Japan is, I believe, the culture that popularized the like ice cream swirl poop. And so now if you draw that, people think it's poop and not necessarily ice cream. So this group gets together. You have the crabs, the chestnut, the bee, the usu, and the poop. And they've teamed up and they're going to get that monkey. They go to the monkey's house. The chestnut gets in the fire. The bee hangs out around the water pail. The cow poop hides in the dirt floor outside the building. And the usu gets on the roof. No explanation of how anything's happened. The usu, since it's sentient somehow, could get on the roof. We're just accepting it. You can see what they've set up is a Rube Goldberg machine of death. They're creating an elaborate way to torture and kill the monkey, which, again, this is dark. Like, when you actually think about what's happening, this is very, very dark. So the monkey comes home and he goes to the fire to warm himself after a hard day of monkeying. And then the chestnut pops, and the pop, you know, that little bit of fire jumps out and hits him in the arm and it burns his arm. So he runs outside and he puts his arm in the water bucket, which is not sentient, which actually I just thought of just now. He puts his arm in the water bucket and then the bee stings him. And then he runs and he slips in the dirt on the cow poop, which essentially would kill the cow poop. I don't know. Again, I don't. They could have just had the crabs bring the cow poop over. It didn't have to be sentient, but it was. It's a character in the story. He slips on the cow poop and he falls down. And then the usu falls down on him and kills him. So this is like Home Alone. This is like full on construction of A to B to C to D to death. Now, Home Alone, I don't believe they killed anybody, but that's because it was a kid's movie. This is a kid's story. Imagine the large trunk of a tree falling and crushing, if not the whole monkey, at least enough of him to kill him. I don't really like how complicated the plan is. I don't think you should do overly complicated plans. If you're going to do murder and stuff, you're going to do that. It has to be simple and direct so you know it's going to be effective. This relies on luck. If he hadn't fallen in the right place, if the burn hadn't been strong enough, the plan fell apart right there. So the plan was overly complicated. I think this is supposed to be the entertaining aspect of the story for the kids, the complicated nature of the plan. But then if you're going to do that, make it way longer. Maybe that's some of the other stories that I didn't read, is that it is way longer. And that is actually the entertainment, is how stupidly complicated the plan is. But every element of the plan furthers torture the monkey before his death. That's something to keep in mind. So when I read this story the first time, went to my Japanese coworkers and I said, what is the moral of this story? And most of them could not really explain it, because it's not forgiveness. It is clearly and exclusively, you killed my parents, I'm going to kill you. And I'm not just going to kill you, I'm going to make it painful and maybe even last as long as possible. Now, someone else in Japanese society kind of came to a similar realization as me. There was a guy named Ryunosuke Akutagawa. He rewrote the end of the story so that the crab children were all arrested and given the death penalty. So this guy thought, there is a moral lacking in this story where the baby crabs get revenge for their parents. They need to be punished by the law because they've committed a murder. So I'm going to give them all the death penalty so no one survives. I mean, they actually make it sound in that way that the poop and the usu and the bee are irrelevant, and the chestnut. Maybe the chestnut, because it's in the fire, like it would be dead, right? The bee, when a bee stings you, it dies. The usu is the only thing that technically could have survived this whole process, because the poop, you slip in the poop. Yeah, anthropomorphizing those was a bad idea, because you have to like hurt them or kill them to get them to participate in this plan. And somehow they agreed to it. No Japanese person I met could ever explain to me the actual moral of that. It was like, don't do bad things. Like, the monkey did a bad thing, and that's why revenge was enacted upon him, so the monkey shouldn't have done bad things. So don't be bad. But I was like, is not a complicated murder also a bad thing? And that's where they ran into problems, because it is hard to deny that the murder torture Saw movie at the end of this story is an acceptable way to behave. I do like that the guy who rewrote the end actually also gave everyone the death penalty. Like, that's not actually better. There's no reconciliation. There's no anyone becoming a better person out of this story. It's just death and murder. Which brings us to our second story, which is the rabbit and the tanuki. The tanuki is a raccoon-style animal in Japan. You probably know that. I don't want to make any assumptions about what people do and don't know. But tanukis are famous in Japan as shapeshifters. There's the War of the Tanuki, which is like humans are encroaching on, it's like a Ghibli movie or something. Humans are encroaching on their land. There's one scene where they use their testicle sacks as, they stretch them out and use them as parachutes. Other cultures are wonderful and exciting to learn about. I did enjoy that. It was very funny. It was very funny to me because it was so weird. This is apparently just part of the tanuki mythology. Anyways, let's get into it. There was a tanuki stealing food from a farmer. Pretty normal thing for an animal to do. The farmer caught him and tied him to a tree, the tanuki. And he says, I'm going to come back later and I'm going to kill you. The tanuki starts to cry. So we all feel bad. The farmer's wife comes back and she feels bad. And the tanuki apologizes and says, I won't do it again. I'm not going to steal any more food. So the old lady, in her kindness, unties the tanuki. So what does the tanuki do? If you haven't already gotten sort of the theme of what's been going on so far, the tanuki then murders the old lady and shapeshifts into her. So when people come back, they're going to see the old lady, but it's actually the tanuki. The tanuki takes the old lady and brings her into the house so no one can see the body. He then cuts her up and prepares her in a meal for the farmer when he comes back. I'm just going to let that one sit for a bit. Everyone makes a big deal about the South Park episode where he feeds the kid his own parents or something. This, way, way back, hundreds of years ago, the Japanese were like, yep, this is what's going to happen. We're going to have a man do unknown cannibalism as part of our folktale to teach kids morals. Again, it's just a revenge story, but So the farmer comes back and he sits down, eats dinner, and they don't say whether he enjoys it or not, but I'm going to go ahead and assume he thinks this is a great dinner, because that just, it's just, it makes it worse. Then the tanuki sort of does the big reveal and says, haha, you've just eaten your own wife, and then books it out of there. Man, yeah, I don't know where to go from there. Like, there was forced cannibalism as part of this story, if you really stop down and think. The farmer is understandably upset. His friend, the rabbit, comes by. He goes, well, hey, buddy, what happened? He goes, well, I kind of just ate my wife. The rabbit vows revenge on the farmer's behalf. There's a few versions of this story, but all share the common element. So I'm only going to use the common elements of this story when I am telling it to you now. Like the previous story, the different versions, really all they do is add more elements of torture to lengthen the story. So I'm going to give you the base version and understand that every other version you could hear has more aspects or elements of torture in it before the actual death at the end. The rabbit befriends the tanuki. Then, one day while they're out in the forest, the rabbit drops a beehive on the tanuki's head. And then the tanuki, of course, gets stings all over his head. So the rabbit treats the stings with pepper to make it hurt more. The tanuki is carrying kindling, so this must be on another day. He's carrying kindling on the way back. And they're walking by. This story is actually called Kachikachi Yama, which is Kachikachi Mountain. And he's carrying kindling, and he's walking along, and the rabbit's behind him and lights the kindling on fire, setting the tanuki on fire from behind. And the tanuki's like, hey, do you hear that sound? Sounds like kachikachi. Kachikachi is the sound of fire. And then the rabbit looks at him and goes, yes, that is because we are walking close to Kachikachi Yama. Kachikachi Yama is Kachikachi Mountain, I guess. And that's why you can hear the kachikachi sound of fire when you are close to this mountain. Of course, it burns his back. It burns the tanuki's back, but it doesn't kill him. But that's when the tanuki realizes the rabbit isn't really his friend. So then he challenges the rabbit to a contest. I don't really get this part. He says, let's race across the lake. So we're going to build our own boats. We're going to race across the lake. The rabbit carves a boat out of a tree trunk, so wood. The tanuki makes his boat out of mud. I think you can see a flaw in the tanuki's plan. As they start going across the lake, the tanuki's boat starts to dissolve. He starts to drown, and the rabbit hits him on the head with an oar. This is the weird part of this revenge, because the revenge part of this, if you had just left the tanuki to his own devices, he would have killed himself. Like, you wouldn't actually have to commit murder. Like, some of the other attempts could have been considered murder attempts, but this one, he challenged you to a race. He built an inferior boat. That inferior boat started to sink. He went down with it. He couldn't swim very well. You could just let him drown and then claim a certain amount of innocence. But the rabbit takes it always that step further. Like, this is it. The protagonist or the hero in these stories always takes it that step further to make sure that they actually kill the thing. So the killing blow is the oar hitting the tanuki in the head. Then the rabbit goes back to the farmer and tells the tale of his revenge, and I guess everyone's satisfied. And this is not an eye for an eye. So, like, you killed my wife, I'm going to kill you. That would be an eye for an eye, I think. This is always, there's another element of I'm going to torture you before I murder you. So it's an eye for an eye plus more. It's almost like your enemies must suffer. And then I asked some Japanese people about this story, and their version of the moral was, don't do bad things. And then when you come back to them and say, well, is not torturing someone also a bad thing? They're like, but that's as a result of your actions. So you, if you hadn't committed those actions, you wouldn't have been tortured in the second place. So that's one of the weird issues of these stories. We have one more story. Now, this one is not about torture and murder. Those two shared a theme. And I read them very close to each other. And when I asked my Japanese friends about them, I never got a satisfactory moral to the story. Essentially, they would just say, don't do bad things. But I'm like, but the result of you doing a bad thing was a very complicated, awful, evil revenge. The last story I'm going to do, though, is called The Boy and the Turtle. And it's just, it's like someone found some LSD way, way back in the day. So there's a little boy on the beach. And he's walking around, and he sees some other boys, and they're bullying a turtle. I don't know what that means. I guess it just means they're playing with a turtle in an unkind way, maybe hitting it or turning it on its back, doing bad things to a turtle. And I think at that point, everyone is on the turtle side. It's like, don't do bad things to turtles. Turtles are cool. This is why the straw industry suffered so much when the straw went up that turtle's nose, because when you hurt a turtle, the world unites against you. So, you know, I don't use straws. I legit don't use straws anymore. I will only use paper straws. And it's because of that turtle. Because turtles don't hurt anybody. Don't hurt turtles. Okay, so he chases the boys off. He says, like, don't bully the turtle. I don't know if he's, like, a scary person. But anyway, he gets the kids to leave him alone. And the turtle says, thank you. Come with me under the sea to a magical world. It's a great invitation. It's almost like Disney should make a song that sounds very similar to that. So they go. So the boy and the turtle go together under the sea, and they go down to this like undersea castle world. Somehow the boy can breathe, not asking any questions. It's magic. This is magic. The undersea kingdom is magic. So I'm perfectly acceptable with what's going on here. The boy attends a 3-day party, and he eats food, and he does like what Japanese people do. They talk to fish. He eats. The thing is, if he's a Japanese kid, he was probably eating fish and talking to fish. That's got to be very uncomfortable. It's not exactly the cannibalism from the previous story, but there is like an uncomfortable element if you're eating like a similar species while having a conversation with someone. But he's having a good time. He's having a party, or maybe they're just eating a lot of seaweed. It's been 3 days. It's time to go. You can only party for so long. So the queen says, come here. I want to thank you for helping our turtle friend. Here's a box. Don't open the fucking box. Already that's a bit weird. It's weird as a present. Like, don't open the box. Here's a box. Don't open the box. And that's it. Now get out. There's no explanation as to why you shouldn't open the box. That is, to me, the biggest problem with this story so far. So the weird present is given to the boy without any explanation. It's just the only thing it said is, here's a box, don't open the box. I'm assuming it's a very nice box. This is a gift from the queen. He goes back to the beach, and he's like, things are different. I just feel different. The beach looks different, you know. Maybe some of the buildings in the background kind of changed. That's weird. And he figures out that time in the undersea kingdom and time in the world he comes from pass differently. It's almost like a interstellar black hole, kind of like time fractioning gravity situation. I'm not going to explain it. We'll just, again, it's magic. But he understands that now 3 days under the water in the underwater party kingdom equals 300 years in the world, which means everyone he knows, his family, his friends, everyone he's ever, you know, everyone's who ever existed, they're all dead now. Like 200 years ago, at least, they're dead. And so he has no home. He has no life. He has no sort of world to support him. Because again, this is not an adult who made this choice. This is a child. And that's another element that I think gets forgotten very quickly. This is a child whose entire support system in the world is now gone 200 years ago. He sits down on the beach and he starts to cry. And then he decides to do the only logical thing. Maybe there's something in the box that could help me in this dire situation that I have been put into. So he opens the box. And when he opens the box, he immediately ages 300 years and dies. What is going on? So the box was somehow holding the difference in time between the real world and the boy. So once the box was open, that whatever magic was released. And so his aging, it must have been incredibly painful for a few seconds. Like he aged 300 years they don't give a time frame, but I'm going to say very quickly. But that aging process must have been incredibly painful, and then just in a sudden death. The only thing I could come up with is you have a short-term reward, but at a massive cost. But the moral of the story actually seems to be, don't help people. Because if he hadn't helped the turtle and left the boys to just bully the turtle more, he wouldn't have gone underseas. He wouldn't have spent those 3 days, ergo 300 years, which means his family wouldn't have died and he would have been able to live a normal life. He lost his life for helping this turtle. And I cannot for the life of me figure out any aspect of this, of having any sort of moral that makes any sort of sense. And then the other question that I have more than anything else is, why didn't the queen give him any sort of explanation? Like, if she had said, hey, look, time passes differently here. So if you go back home and you open this box, you're going to age in the difference, the 300 years, and you're going to die. So don't open the box. Then he would know what was going to happen. She could have explained that to him. But then he would have had the question of, well, why did you keep me here for so long, knowing that everything in my world was going to change and disappear and all my family was going to die and I'm not going to have a life? And then it would have made more sense for him to just stay in the underwater kingdom. Like, there's no, all the questions lead to, you helped a turtle and lost everything. The queen maliciously, because I don't think there was any ignorance. She knew to say, don't open that box. So she knew what was going to happen if you open that box. She didn't give him any way to go back to the real world and actually have some sort of life. She just like dumped him and left him on his own. So is that punishment for coming to the undersea kingdom? Was that punishment for helping the turtle? Was this whole thing some kind of weird strategy? But that seems like mental torture for the kid as he sits there and realizes 300 years ago, everything I know is no longer existed. I don't have anything in this world anymore. I have no life. My world has ended. I went and asked some Japanese people what this means. Like, what is this story about? And they said, well, it teaches you nothing. It's just a fanciful story. And I was like, it's a fanciful story with one of the most horrendous endings to a story for someone who has tried to be a good person the whole time. Doing good things might have short-term benefits, but lead to the loss in the long term. I spent months and months and months trying to figure out some kind of lesson or story or moral or point to this boy in the turtle story, and I've never been able to do it. If you have an idea, please post it in the comments. Please send me a message, chunkmyvchs@gmail.com or something, because I got nothing. I've asked Japanese people. They got nothing. They're just like, oh, it's just like a fun, weird story. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's horrible. And it makes me question everything I understand about Japanese culture.
Enter the mind of the academy. Chop my big chest where the best is a philosophy. Drinking at lunch brings verbal skills like a sucker punch. Welcome to CMIB. Yeah, yeah. CMIB. Yeah, yeah. CMIB. Yeah, yeah. CMIB. Yeah.